This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is ticking away, down to 25 seconds. The Bears are out of field goal range. They have one timeout. It's third and forever. Williams at the line, tapping his head. We're down to 15 seconds here. Caleb Williams out of the shotgun, third and long. Time is moving. Gotta go under 10 seconds now. Oh my goodness. Back to Williams. He's ready to throw. He'll throw it down the middle of the field. Incomplete at the horn. The game is over. The Bears won't even get to fourth down. They leave Detroit with a timeout in their pocket. And the Lions, for the first time since 16, have won on Thanksgiving. 23-20, the final score. How in the world can that happen? It's the Bears.
That is a great line. I didn't hear the end of that until right then. I only heard the beginning of that clip. That was Westwood One. Who was on the call there? Was that Ryan Leaf who said that? It's the Bears at the end.
That was Ryan Leaf, yes.
That is incredible. Listen, first of all, happy day after Thanksgiving. It's the Pomp and Joe show. Needless to say, there's no Pomp, but there is Joe. There's no Donnie Football on a Donnie Football Friday. Things get a little haywire during the holidays. And there will be times, of course, that I'm not here on some holidays. And Little Limits, is that his name? He's not here either. So I have Sean Don't Call Me Seth Meyers, which I'm very proud to say and very privileged to have him. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Do you think Limits survived that Turkey Bowl game he was talking about?
I hope so. I hope he did. I know what Dom, your predecessor in there this morning, didn't survive, and that was trying to win a turkey food or a Thanksgiving food draft against Donnie Football, and he drafted pumpkin roll as one of his top five picks as a dessert.
He's doubling down on that now.
I know. He doubles down on everything. I'll tell you, his decision, though, was not as bad as the one we saw yesterday. And that's what I came here to talk about. Believe it or not, listen, it would take a lot to knock the Steelers off the front page, so to speak, here today. To not open with Steelers-Bengals. That'll be the thrust of the show, of course, today. Big game for the Steelers. Bigger for the Bengals, I would argue. Of course, we're going to dive into all of that. We're going to talk to Ray Fittipaldo. We're going to do a bunch of things today. But I'm sorry. I've been watching. Sean, how long have you been watching football? 40 years, 30 years?
Not 40 years, no. Yeah, so early 90s?
Sure. 30 years, let's say. Is that 30 years? Yeah, that's
ballpark, yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching it consciously for almost 50. That makes 80 approximately between us. And what happened at the end of that game yesterday, I might not be talking about this if it was a random Sunday game either, but it's a game that we all watched. Across Western Pennsylvania, we were all watching it, and about probably 40 million people were watching this thing on Thanksgiving yesterday, and it's one of maybe the five worst coaching decisions, maybe a non-decision, that I've ever seen at the end of a game. Just absolutely mangled the end of this game. And I've been obsessed reading about it, listening to the clips ever since then. I can't believe what I saw. Even my wife was up in arms watching this. And she doesn't watch a ton of football. She's like, call timeout? What's happening? When the previous play ended, there were 33 seconds on the clock. 33 seconds, one timeout. At this point, you're probably just trying to get a field goal, right? At the very worst, you are at the Lions, about their 41 or so. Would have been like a 59, 58-yard field goal in there. And I realize that the Bears kicker had not kicked one that long. I think he hadn't even attempted one that long, but he had attempted a 55-yarder. I mean, anything is better than what happened. If you had to call timeout with right before the ball was snapped and just said, screw it, now we have to kick the field goal, that's a million times better than what actually transpired on that play. As all of America, including Matt Eberflus, the coach himself, watched the clock go towards zero. And we all knew that when the ball was snapped, they wouldn't have time for anything but that play, which turned out to be a desperation play down the field. It was one of the worst end-of-game coaching management situations, one of the worst coaching jobs, to refine that statement, in the history of the NFL, courtesy of Matt Eberflus, who's actually a likable figure. I mean, he actually went on in front of the media after the game and said, we liked our decision making. He said that. I admire this guy. I don't know where to start, where to end on this. You all saw it. Where does it rank? In all time, I've looked at a bunch of lists today. The worst decisions of all time. And by the way, I think Mike Tomlin might have had one if Lamar Jackson had gone down the field in that game and scored a touchdown. Rightly or wrongly, you agree or disagree, he might have made top 10 because whatever the circumstances were in that game, the line would be, number 10, Mike Tomlin kicks to Lamar Jackson to start overtime. Jackson drives down the field and the Ravens win. That, to me, was still an unbelievable decision. And I know the Steelers stopped them. They're good against Lamar. They got the ball back. And then Juju fumbled or they probably win. I get all that. I'm just saying that would have been a candidate. But not in the ballpark of the top fives. One of those, and I'm looking at, I don't know what list this is, honestly. Number five is Bill Belichick's 4th-and-2 call against the Colts in 2009. Remember that one from his own 28, and he was only up 6. He was only up 6 late in the game, and they didn't get it, and the Colts got it and scored. Now, I think even that type of thing would be frowned upon nowadays, although it's more common that in that ballpark. There was Jason Garrett's decision to ice his own kicker. You remember that one, Sean?
Never seems like a good strategy to ice your own kicker.
No. 2011. With time expiring, he called timeout just as his own kicker, I think it was Dan Bailey, was about to kick a 49-yard field goal. The dude went ahead with the kick because it was such a last-instant type thing and made it. And then on the re-kick, he missed it. He iced his own kicker. And I think the widely acknowledged first worst call of all time was Pete Carroll calling a pass play instead of giving it to Beast Mode to win the Super Bowl. Who was the coach for the Miracle at the Meadowlands? Who was the Giants coach for that game? And how is that not on here? That they didn't just kneel down at the end of the game and win the game. Do you remember who the coach was?
No, Sean? I'm investigating right now.
Because that one's up there.
John McVay.
There you go. See, Sean McVay's dad, yes, I believe. Grandfather?
Yeah, sounds
I don't
good.
Know.
Yeah.
Something like
Some
that.
Some relation. They got the last same name, so.
You seem depressed today. Are you okay?
I'm wonderful. How about you?
I'm great. It's the day after Thanksgiving. All of America is geared up for football. I just sensed mildly, perhaps, that you're mildly depressed.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
No more
depressed than normal.
All right, I'll grant you that. How is John McVay not on this list for not calling a kneel down, and it was only the most ridiculous play in the history of the league when Herman, you play to win the game, Edwards picked up a fumble from Joe Pisarcik on a handoff to Larry Zonka. How is that not number one?
Joe Pisarcik?
No, not Joe Pisarcik. He would have run for a touchdown on that play. Joe Pisarcik. How is that not number one? Anyway, where does this rank? I think in terms of time management, it's the worst coaching job in the history of professional football. Would you agree with that? Can you think of anything close?
So this was what I was thinking. There's been scenarios. I think of Dak Prescott a few years ago where he slid at the end of that playoff game.
But that's not a coaching decision.
Exactly. Even earlier this year, Ohio State and Oregon, same situation. But that's a player. This is both a player and a coach allowing it to happen.
See, this is, to me, 100% the coach.
Well, yeah, he did not help out a rookie quarterback. He expected, apparently, that his rookie quarterback would be able to handle this much differently than he did. And Williams clearly was in no rush. So the onus at that point is on the head coach to make sure his rookie is not in a position to make that mistake.
Call timeout. Call timeout.
Now, I will say if they got the playoff with 15 seconds left, that's fine. But
sure,
they weren't even close to that.
Right.
And he had to sense that they weren't close to that.
I've never seen, first of all, I didn't think I would see anything in this week, the calendar week of football, that was worse than the Steelers allowing their backup quarterback to throw a bomb down the right sidelines with the game on the line when they had their starting quarterback not only available, but red hot in the game. Didn't think I'd see a decision worse than that, but this is an all-timer that all of America was talking about. It gave a divisive nation something to agree upon, and that is that Matt Eberflus needs to go. He needs to go.
He hasn't been fired yet, right? I mean,
no,
how has that happened?
How do you let him back on the plane? So do you have the TV call of this disaster? Because it was actually comical when Romo realized, oh no.
Well, this is supposed to be a quarterback draw. They have a light box.
Clock is running with 15 seconds, and it's 3rd and 26. They have one timeout left.
This is like the light box. You could have gotten numbers, but just didn't.
You better hurry.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is a disaster in the making here. You're going to have to do something when it comes down to this play. Incomplete, and the game is over. Completely botched at the end by the Bears.
The best.
I can't believe they didn't take a timeout. Just assume.
Yeah, we assumed. All of America assumed that Eberflus would take a timeout. Now, this guy, Eberflus, he's likable, Matt Eberflus.
Great hair.
He just seems like a very mild-mannered guy, but mild-mannered to the point that he's unaware of his surroundings. He's one of those lovable characters who he's like the living, is it a meme or a gif where the person has a fire going on behind them, a raging fire?
Everything is fine.
Everything is fine. He's that guy. Oh my God, has anybody done that yet? I'm sure they have on social media. Substituted Eberflus's face for that guy on that particular meme. Is it a meme?
Yes.
That would be spectacular. So after the game, first of all, he looks like nothing happened as he's walking off the field. He is likable, isn't he? Eberflus?
He seems like a decent guy. We could hang out with him on a, you know.
I almost want him to stay around. And then falling in line with the cover-up is worse than the crime, although maybe this is more like a bad explanation is worse than the crime, or delusion is worse than the crime. He made it 8 million times, as if anything or anyone could make that worse. He did, by orders of magnitude, as Malzi would say. With what he said at his post game, he shouldn't have been allowed to get onto the bus after his post game. The owner should have called him and said, are you kidding? No, I'm not talking about the end of the game. I'm talking about what you just said at the news conference. Are you kidding me? Let's hear him.
Deal. So it was third going into fourth. That's why I wanted to preserve the timeout.
So how, in retrospect, how should you have handled the final sequence?
Yeah, I like what we did there. again, once it's under seven, you know, you're gonna call.
Is that it?
That's it.
Clip that little part where he says, I like what we did. He said, I like what we did. Which might be the most miraculous quote in NFL history. I just can't fathom this whole thing. And if you think I'm engaging in hyperbole, somebody tell me something you've seen worse than that. I even expanded my thoughts to all of sports history. What were some of the worst coaching decisions in the history of sports? I'll get into that in a minute. It actually made this whole thing great, though, didn't it? I mean, it seemed to be a nothing Thanksgiving Day game, which was going to be followed by a less than nothing game between the Giants and the Cowboys. But this one turned into, everybody's centerpiece. The centerpiece wasn't the turkey yesterday around America. It was Matt Eberflus.
It was a turkey in a sense.
Matt Eberflus on a stick. So if you think I'm engaging in hyperbole, which I'm often accused of, listen to Jimmy Johnson after the game saying that in seven decades of being around the game of football, he's never seen anything like this. You can weigh in, by the way, at 412-928-9370. Perhaps we could even expand it to the worst coaching decisions in the history of Pittsburgh sports. That might be an idea here. For some reason, Narduzzi at the goal line against Penn State a couple of years back springs to mind. As I mentioned, I thought Tomlin kicking to Lamar Jackson was an act of insanity. A lot of people defended it because it worked, sort of, in the end, to where they stopped him, got a chance to win before Juju fumbled. But anyway... off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. Let's get to Jimmy Johnson after that debacle.
In 70 years of coaching at all three levels, I've never seen dysfunction that cost a team an opportunity to win the game.
Wow.
Obviously, he's got a rookie quarterback, and different teams do it different way. I handle clock management and timeouts. Sometimes the quarterback and the coach does it. Sometimes the coach has a coach in the box talking to him about clock management. But when Eberflus saw that they were off track and there was dysfunction, he should have called timeout. He says he wanted to communicate to the rookie quarterback, the throwing out route, stop the clock, then call the timeout.
They did not throw
that was never communicated.
The communication was off.
That
regardless of what the chain of command was, Eberflus has the ability to say, call timeout.
Call timeout.
70 years, Jimmy Johnson says. 70 years in the game, he's never seen that. I'm not that old, but I can tell you again, in approximately five decades of consciously watching football, that one took the cake, at least as far as time management goes. It's right up there with the miracle at the Meadowlands, John McVay. not kneeling on the ball, handing it off, and there you go. And guess who got fired for that? Bob Gibson, not the pitcher, but the Giants offensive coordinator got fired the next day. But you keep the head coach? Are you kidding me? You ready for some of the worst decisions, coaching decisions in the history of sports?
I sure am.
Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers. This is an old one from ESPN's Page 2, which used to exist, but I found these funny. I mean, in the end, you hate to see this happen to somebody, but it was funny, wasn't it? I mean, it was comical.
Yeah. I mean, especially because at this point, most people already thought he was on his way out, and this is kind of the nail in the coffin type of thing.
Yeah, and I think it was, I think very briefly, it was, as I said, uniting for all of America. The one thing that, who knew that the one thing that could unite us all, even for a brief moment, was Matt Eberflus watching 30 seconds go off the clock with a timeout in his pocket and basically letting the game end. How was he not fired today? How did he get on the plane?
I thought there was going to be like two henchmen that grabbed him during his press conference and just like picked him up out of his seat and carried him out of the building.
It's the one thing we all agree on as Americans, that this was a horrid, horrid decision. And then he went after the game. And what did he say? I liked it. I liked what we did there.
I like what we did there.
He's made two lists, two all-time lists, worst coaching decisions and most ridiculous indicting, self-indicting quote in the history of sports. I feel bad for my friend Kirk Schlecker. He is a diehard Bears fan. He didn't respond to my text, my WTF 20 question mark text that I sent him yesterday at the end of that game. No response. Usually at least he has. I texted him at the end. Listen to this. They lost on a Hail Mary earlier this season where one of their players was talking to the crowd after the ball was snapped. And that's going to go down as their second most ridiculous loss of the season. Their second most.
Well, there's still another six games left or whatever. They'll see if they can top it somehow.
And the all-time, these are all-time lists. All-time lists of player gaffes. Tyreek Stevenson is top five. History of the NFL, I think, right? Talking to, not only did was he talking and taunting the crowd, after the ball was snapped, he then went and tipped the ball. Didn't he make the game-losing tip right to the Commanders?
Yes. Yes.
That's great stuff. That's the second most ridiculous loss the Bears have had in five weeks or something? In a month?
Yeah,
not just in franchise history, in a month. And this guy's still the coach.
I cannot believe that he's already made it to 10:25 today as the head coach.
It's a miracle. It's the miracle at the Meadowlands. So how about this, Sean? Let's rank it with the worst coaching decisions in sports history. And this list is old, so there may have been several between when this was made and now. My apologies for that. You tell me if this is worse. All we have to say is it's better or worse than this event. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
McNamara plays Buckner. We all know the Buckner play and what happened there in the 86 series. Normally, the Red Sox manager would have replaced Bill Buckner with Dave Stapleton. No relation to Chris Stapleton, I don't think, to shore up his defense as a defensive replacement. He didn't, and we all saw what happened. Is this I guess we can't take out the magnitude of the game, can we? Is this better or worse than that?
Eberflus is way worse. I mean, to say that it was the fault of the manager that a first baseman couldn't handle a routine ground ball. I mean, that's not that big of a malfeasance by the manager. Because that's a guy that plays first base.
Basically, lose them the World Series.
Sure,
on
but he played.
Roller.
I mean, we've already conceded. He plays first base the first seven, eight innings.
Yeah,
of most
you're
games.
Right. You're right, and I agree. Eberflus is worse than this.
Way worse.
The baseball equivalent of what Eberflus did, what is it? I don't know, pulling your team off the field after two outs when you're trying to rally?
I mean, if
he
had put a guy that had never played the field at first base in that scenario, but this is a guy that normally plays the field for, you know, until late inning scenarios, so it, obviously he's competent enough to play it primarily.
Okay, the second one, the second one nobody cares about. It was from, like, back when Ron broke in as a beat writer in the 1920s. The number three, the headline for this is Morning Wigs Boner, which is an unfortunate headline for that on ESPN. Would you agree with that, Sean?
What was it again?
Morning Wigs Boner is what they called this.
Yeah, that's tough.
This is
wasn't there a Merkel's boner too?
That's another player malfunction. This one, Marty Morning Wig, and this is sort of along the lines of what Tomlin did with Lamar, I must say. He won the flip in overtime, chose to kick under the old rules, giving his team the wind at their backs, which was wonderful, except the Bears got the ball and went down the field and scored in overtime, and he lost.
And that was when even just a field goal would end the game.
Yes, I believe so. I still think this is worse. Honest to God. The guy was looking at the clock. He had a chance to do something about it real time, and he just never called time out.
Yeah, the thing that I keep going back to is even at 10 seconds left, they could have called a timeout and found a way to likely make it work.
When was the ball snapped? At 6?
I think it was like 7 seconds.
Okay. As soon as it gets to 10, maybe even 12 or 13, you have to call timeout.
Yes.
But even if you call it right at the snap, and the only thing you can do left is try a 58 or 59-yard field goal, that is infinitely preferable to what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they were going to need a 40-plus yard touchdown, and clearly Caleb Williams didn't seem to understand that concept by the time he snapped it. So
I mean, yeah, Caleb Williams was obviously not handling things wonderfully there, but this is still, for me, 100% on the coach.
You know what else I've thought about is, let's say they get that playoff with 15 seconds left.
Yeah.
Okay. If he throws an incompletion, they still have that timeout, and at that point, that timeout has no value.
Because it was fourth down.
Yes. You wouldn't have, I mean, the timeout would have served you no purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So you would have had to try the field goal anyway, or a Hail Mary on fourth down.
Right. So that's why, I mean, that timeout really only made sense if they got a playoff quickly and completed it in the field of play.
Six Pack is brought to you by Bet365. All right. Victor Tikhonov is fourth on this list. When he replaced the greatest goalie in the world with the score tied 2-2 in the Miracle on Ice game. That wasn't good. Don't get me wrong. That's like taking Michael Jordan out of an Olympic basketball game, you know, with the score tied after the first quarter because he had a bad quarter. It's actually one of the most ridiculous decisions in history. But this was still worse. This wasn't a gold medal game, but this was worse.
I'm guessing.
Or silver medal, I should say. Yes, silver medal. You know what I mean. Semifinal game. It wasn't the gold medal game.
I'm guessing that was more so trying to wake his team up.
Yeah.
Type of situation. That said, there's better ways to do that than take out the best goalie in the world, supposedly, at that time. But yeah, I mean, that one you could see maybe working for what his intention was we have such a better team, we just need to wake him up. Type of situation.
Exactly.
I don't really see any benefit to Eberflus's approach once it got to a certain time left.
I think this might be the worst decision in sports history, the more I'm looking at it. I mean, Morning Wigs Boner isn't even close, is it, Sean?
No, that was really dumb too, though. Although I want to say, I could be wrong about this, I thought that happened multiple times where a coach wanted his defense out on the field first. I didn't think that was the only situation that happened.
Even under the old rules?
Yeah, I thought that happened a couple of times.
I would have to look at that. I would have to look at that very closely.
When was that morning? Was that like around 2000 or so?
I don't know. Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it happened a few times.
It might have. Maybe the worst of all time is Pete Carroll with Russ on the field at the end of the Super Bowl.
He was trying to let him cook.
To not give the ball to Marshawn Lynch. And yeah, throw from down there.
The ramifications of that trump everything else. There's no doubt about that. That said, you have a potential future Hall of Fame quarterback. You trust him as well in that scenario. In retrospect, it cost him a Super Bowl. So that's way bigger than the Bears losing a kind of meaningless game. But you could at least understand, we think that this is one of the best quarterbacks in football. We trust him as much as anyone. We're going to catch this defense off guard, you know?
Has anybody ever done a list of the worst coaching decisions in Pittsburgh sports history?
Sounds like a good idea for you.
I wonder. Perhaps I should have done one before the show. Let me put some thought into that, and you too, and just this topic in general, how this has sort of hijacked the show today, and how all of America not only talked about it at the dinner table yesterday, if they were talking at all, but they're still talking about it this morning. Maybe the worst coaching decision in pro football history. Jimmy Johnson said it. Let's end with that, with Jimmy Johnson. Who do we have coming back, Sean? Do we have any more reaction to that? Was there somebody else ripping this to shreds?
Oh, I'm sure everyone. We can see if there's anyone else, but that's the extent of what we have for now.
All right. Fan text line you can weigh in. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing & Siding. We got Ray Fittipaldo at the top of the hour talking all things Steelers, Bengals. As we continue to reel from watching maybe the worst coaching decision in football history unfold before our very eyes. And if you think, again, that I'm engaging in hyperbole there, listen to Jimmy Johnson and what he said.
In 70 years of coaching at all three levels, I've never seen dysfunction that cost a team an opportunity to win the game.
Wow.
Obviously, he's got a rookie quarterback, and different teams do it different way. I handle clock management and timeouts. Sometimes the quarterback and the coach does it. Sometimes the coach has a coach in the box talking to him about clock management. But when Eberflus saw that they were off track and there was dysfunction, he should have called timeout. He says he wanted to communicate to the rookie quarterback, the throw and out route, stop the clock, then call the timeout.
They did not throw
that was
out
never
out
communicated.
The communication was off.
That
regardless of what the chain of command was, Eberflus has the ability to say, call timeout.
Call timeout.
We all saw it in this town and probably 40 million of us across the country yesterday. Maybe the worst coaching decision in NFL history. Jimmy Johnson said he's never seen anything like that in 70 years in the game. It was the great Matt Eberflus, christened Matt Eberlus because he's finding new ways to lose. And I mean very innovative, historically incredible ways to lose.
Yeah, I like what we did there.
That was him after the game. Saying he liked what we did. To be that unaware, the lack of self-awareness, the lack of what might be going on back in Chicago within the fan base, the least that you owe those people is, I screwed that up in ways unimaginable. I apologize to the entire Bear, is it Bear Nation? What do they call themselves? I don't know. There needed to be an apology, perhaps with tears and a written note, like take out an ad in the Chicago Sun-Times or something.
Even if it's the quarterback's fault, you know, 50%, which I don't think it was necessarily, as the head coach, you have to take that blame so that it's not thrust on Caleb Williams, right? I mean, you're one of your
that
biggest.
Too. Yeah.
One of your biggest descriptions of your job right now is to make sure that you make things work with this first overall pick. And he's going to get some heat now because the coach wouldn't take the blame entirely for this.
Well, he might. I tend to think that the way Caleb played in that game yesterday, that Bears fans were pretty thrilled with that because he was electric in the second half. I tend to think that Eberlus, no matter what he said, is going to take the brunt of this. But I do agree with you that that's part of the reason. As a coach, you go up there and say what you need to say. But he's the one with timeout power. Like, what in the world are you thinking? And then you made a worse decision somehow. You might have made the worst decision in the history of football. Then you made a worse one 10 minutes later in front of the media by saying, what did he say again? Can I hear that again?
Yeah, I like what we did there.
I actually love that. I do, but it has me thinking about the worst decisions in every sport, the worst coaching decision decisions in Pittsburgh sports history. I noted Viktor Tikhonov taking the best goalie in the world out of the Miracle on Ice game, an Olympic semifinal, with the score 2-2. Took out the best goalie, maybe the best player on the planet. He took him out. And then my friend Josh Yowie reminded me, should also be noted that Russia never pulled the goalie while down 4-3 in the final minute. How about that? Did you forget about that, Sean?
I did forget about that, yeah.
Other horrible NFL decisions. Mike Ditka not giving Walter Payton the ball at the goal line in the Super Bowl. Remember that? Multiple times.
So that's kind of the same Marshawn Lynch dynamic then.
Yeah, I mean, this one was more sentimental than it was game-deciding, of course. But that was interesting to see that one on there. The Belichick 4th-and-2, the miracle at the Meadowlands where they don't kneel on the ball. Did you know about this one? 2007, in December, Sexy Rexy gets involved here, and he was only a defensive coordinator. I didn't even know they could call timeout. The Patriots, he was the Ravens defensive coordinator, Rexy. Patriots were 4th-and-1 at the Ravens 30, and Tom Brady called a quarterback sneak for himself, obviously, and was stuffed. But right before it, Rexy called timeout. You think that one went over well in Baltimore?
No, but I mean, I don't think that's that egregious, right? He probably saw something and said, okay, we need a different alignment right now. Now, it's like particularly unfortunate that they did go through with the play and it seemingly was going to be a stop. But yeah, I can't blame a defensive coach for calling timeout if he sees some sort of issue there.
Well, I don't know, man. I guess it looks a billion times worse when they make the stop, but I do hear what you're saying. Jason Garrett icing his own kicker makes this list. Bill Belichick benching Wes Welker in a playoff game. And then, of course, Pete Carroll at the end of the Super Bowl.
We got a lot of text on the college side of things last year. Miami had a game won against Georgia Tech, but instead of kneeling, they ran the football, fumbled Georgia
Tech. That's right.
So Mario Cristobal getting a lot of crap from our texters for his decision.
That's why we pay our texters the big bucks. They come through in times
yes,
like
absolutely.
That.
Yes,
Pittsburgh sports history. Trying to think. Some would say some of the moves by Jim Leland in that horrifying Sid Bream game.
Someone said not bringing in Tim Wakefield.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I was always mad at Cowher when he went for a field goal instead of going for it on fourth down when they were actually making a comeback against the Patriots in Ben's rookie year in the AFC title game. They were getting killed. And they had a nice little comeback moving. I think they could have made it 31. I think they could have pulled within a touchdown maybe. And Cowher just took the air out of the place by going for a field goal that didn't make any difference. Also, Cowher going with Neil O'Donnell instead of Bubby Brister against the Bills in that playoff game many, many years ago. Steelers fans of a certain age will remember. They were mad at him for that. But I just can't think of anything like this.
Was there anything egregious in that loss against the Chargers in the playoffs when the Steelers were clearly the better team?
I was just talking to Jim Rooney about that yesterday. Maybe the coverage on that long pass with Tim McCyre. Were people complaining about the coverage? Remember when?
I guess if you have to think that hard about it, then yeah. There's nothing that's that glaring.
Probably. The play at the goal line was to Dennis Gibson. I remember that. Unfortunately, Dennis Gibson played for the other team. All right. 412-928-9370. Get in a last second call or two. Let's go, Sean, before we get to Ray Fittipaldo. Who we got?
We're going to go Gary in the car.
What's up, Gary?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, guys? Happy day after Thanksgiving.
It's only me here. It's the Pomp and Joe show with no Pomp, and it's Donnie Football Friday with no Donnie.
Oh, okay, Joe. Well, I have a Pittsburgh take. Panther fans of a certain age will remember this. They were in the, I believe, the Sweet 16 trying to get to the Elite Eight. They were playing Purdue. And a couple seconds left, coming out of the timeout, all they had to do was foul. They let the guy dribble all the way down the court, shoot a three-pointer. The Panthers lost. And Paul Evans threw his freshman under the bus and said, well, he should have known.
Yeah, that was Vanderbilt, not Purdue. And you're right about
Vanderbilt?
That. You are right about that, man.
I apologize. I thought it was Purdue.
No, that's immaterial, really. The point is that might be, people may call that the worst coaching decision in Pittsburgh sports history.
It was horrible.
That was the Barry Goheen game. This guy's unbelievable limits to come up and remember that. You might be right about that.
He's been sticking in my claw for 30 years.
They should have fouled him, or so they thought. And there's been stories written about that one. Great call.
Yeah.
Great
That's
call.
The only
Thank
thing
you.
That Eberflus didn't do was throw his quarterback under the bus.
Well, he kind of did by saying he liked what they did there. That just makes it worse. Appreciate the call. What a nice man he was.
He was, yeah. Did you call me Limits, by the way?
Did I? Oh, my God. This story is written by John Feinstein, the famous author. I just went back and looked at this from March 21st, 1988, The Washington Post, back when newspapers existed and journalism was a thing. You had John Feinstein covering this game. Barry Goheen knew it was Lincoln, Nebraska. Barry Goheen knew there was no time to think, no time to pass, and no time to panic. That's a good lead, Sean.
It is.
There were 4 seconds left this afternoon when he turned up court at Bob Devaney Athletic Center, and the scoreboard told him all he needed to know. Pittsburgh 69, Vanderbilt 66. I thought they might foul me in the backcourt, Goheen said. You think? But they let me go. And then John Feinstein misspelled Durrell Porter's name. D-U-R-E-L-L. Come on, John.
Send him an email.
I just gave journalism, at least old school journalism, a compliment. He misspelled Durrell Porter's name, for God's sakes. I guess he was supposed to foul. I don't know. That's what this story says. Maybe Paul Evans got it screwed up in the huddle. That's what a lot of people say. Anyway, Goheen hits the shot, and they tie the game. One of the most horrifying moments in Pittsburgh sports history. I actually did an exorcism once, like a seance. It was before the Steelers-Chargers playoff game much later on with Santonio Holmes that year. He was a star in that game. Returned a punt for a touchdown, I believe. James Harrison and Lamar Woodley planted Philip Rivers like a javelin in the end zone in that game too. You remember the year, right? So going into that playoff game, I decided that it would be a good idea to have an exorcism of sorts.
So you had holy water and all that?
Well, sort of. I was doing a radio show on another station in a galaxy far, far away. Actually, it was right around the corner. And I had all the great villains from Pittsburgh sports either quoted or had them as guests on the show. Barry Goheen was one. Dennis Gibson was the obvious one because they were playing the Chargers again, right? I think he owned a pizza shop in Chicago or Nebraska or somewhere like that. Iowa, maybe. Dennis Gibson. David Volek, I couldn't get, but I had a quote from him. Francisco Cabrera. That's the Mount Rushmore of villains, is it not?
What's
and Bream.
Graves.
Bream or Cabrera, whichever one you want to.
Graves for the was the Rangers.
Yeah.
Adam Graves, right?
I mean, he was a villain for breaking Mario's wrist, but the big villain was David Volek for the Islanders. That was the guy. Volek, Goheen, either Cabrera or Bream. And then Dennis Gibson. That was it. That was the list. But
Larry
man,
Brown, maybe a honorable mention.
Yeah. Yeah. Larry Brown would have been a good honorable mention.
Thank you.
I should have gotten a hold of him. We should redo that show sometime. I mean, it was torturous for everyone involved, but I felt like let's get this out of the way. Let's clear out the bad juju, so to speak, and start anew here. And it worked. They won that playoff game, you might remember, and went to the Super Bowl.
I think you deserve a lot of credit for that.
So do I. All right. Ray Fittipaldo is next. He's going to talk about this Steeler game, a very big game for the Steelers, but I would say infinitely bigger for the Bengals. Their season is on the line. We talk about must wins. It may literally be a must win for them. I don't think they can get in at 9-8. They could. They need to not lose the